Welcome to the Tech Nerdy Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. I feel like everything is just coming together all at one time, and my mind is about to be blown. We've got a baby due in 4 weeks, which I just didn't think about it. And that made me start thinking about expectations and how to set them better. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about baby, and I affectionately just call it baby. And it's either I'm a genius or I'm an idiot. And we're going to find out. That's for sure. People tell me, oh, you got to get your sleep and all this other shit. And like, I'm like, you know, whatever. I don't think this is going to be that big a deal. I think I know exactly what I got into, and I'm going to chart it out and I'm going to handle it. So I guess it gets me thinking about expectations in general and setting them. And I'm going to try to be a little bit more introspective on these, this like opening of the podcast going forward. If you don't like it, you can just tweet at Catoon and tell me you don't like it and I'll stop. But like sometimes we forget that we're all sort of the same thing. My producer, one of the original producer going back to 2013, wow. Michael J. Foxy, Michael Heidemann, You've been here a long time.
It's been a while, and it's a wild ride to see, you know, where you've gone from taking this show and getting it started and getting it to WGN on air on the AM side of things, and now you're going to be a father, you have a business underneath you. It's crazy.
My point in all that is, and thank you, I appreciate that. We all have to go through a ton of trouble, and it's like it might look good because we get to edit. But like in life, you don't get to edit. And I think for me, it's a learning curve just the same as everybody else. And the thing today you're going to hear in our conversation with Rick Bowman as the CEO of ShiftGig is this like managing expectations thing. It's this understanding, you know, who you are in the world and knowing that like you can't solve everything. But the fastest way to make sure that you don't have to deal with like feeling like you have to solve everything is just setting expectations for yourself and for everyone you work with. Like letting them know this is the expectation. This is what we're trying to do. This is what I expect from you. This is what you should expect from me. And doing your best to deliver on that. And I think ShiftGig does an interesting way of sort of doing that, which is my very weak way of starting to slide towards the show. But before we do talk about Rick Bowman in the interview, we do have to go to our startup inbox, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. We actually use ActiveCampaign, so like it's not just a live read. And I'm going to kick it to Michael J. Foxy for the first time to read. Do we have a startup inbox for one? Who is it and what do they have to ask?
Yes, we do. In fact, surprisingly, it's from a man named Tim Fox.
Sweet name.
I'm a big fan of that name.
I was going to say Michael J. Foxy reading a Tim Fox question.
This might be my brother from another mother in fact. So from Tim Fox, he asks, with the tightening labor market shrinking the pool of workers for gig jobs, is the gig economy already fading or still the future?
So I will keep this real simple. The question that is being asked is gig economy fading or is it the future? And the vast majority of that question gets answered for the next 35 minutes of conversation with the CEO of ShiftGig, obviously. So good timing. But I'm going to tell you, it is not fading. The gig economy is growing every single day. And I don't mean Uber and Lyft and things like that. It is professional jobs. It is, I mean, I know people who are making very good livings, working more or less full time, who still Uber, who still do daycare, you know, care.com for kids and for pets, and they bartend, and they do real estate prospecting, and they do picking up shifts for other people in different spots, event stuff, photography, videography, DJ. We are a culture that is so ADD that we quit before we get fired, usually, jobs, because we're bored. And so one of the best ways to fix that problem and make sure you keep your insurance or whatever it is that your reason you're at your job is to do side stuff, make some money. But the end game here is you've got to love it. Pick things you're passionate about. But to the answer directly on the shift economy, the gig economy, it is growing faster and faster and faster. And in fact, I've heard arguments from people that the most talented people in any given space, marketing or whatever, actually don't take a job. They only worked gig economy because they make the most money and they get to do the stuff they're best at all day long, and they don't have to dick around with any of the politics and the internal garbage. So I don't know about you, Foxy, but I think the gig economy is actually like a huge benefit.
I totally agree with you, though. It's interesting to see how the proliferation, I guess, of jobs has really taken over. Because when you and I were growing up, you weren't able to take a job. It was like lawn mowing, babysitting, and that was it.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you can go and be a DJ somewhere, or you could go and be an Uber driver. That was the scariest thing in the world, and it's interesting to see where it's going, and who knows what's going to happen in the future.
I think it's going to keep growing. All right, let us move over to our conversation with Rick Bowman, CEO of ShiftGig. Not only do we talk about a little bit about, like, obviously ShiftGig and its changes, but more importantly, he talks about himself a little bit and about the actual story of how he became the CEO of ShiftGig. And it's interesting because it shines a light on why Chicago is so cool. This is my conversation with Rick Bowman, CEO of ShiftGig. Because I just think it's like it's appropriate, and he'll listen, and then he'll start emailing me and being like, I owe him a half dozen emails and getting my partner, Mike Rothman, and him in a room, which we've been talking about for a month and haven't been able to get done. So this is to you, Eddie. This is our way of saying we're ready to meet again. It's been a while, and I apologize on my delay. Obviously, Rick, you've been at ShiftGig now for a couple of years, right?
Close to it? It'll be coming on 2 years in July.
Okay. So ShiftGig is one of those companies that, If you're a part of Chicago Tech, and part of that's not just the company and what Eddie, you know, obviously contributed a great deal to build, but it's also got his personality that has been so ingrained in Chicago Tech. ShiftGig is one of those original companies in Chicago that if you are a founder or repeat founder, you've been around for, you know, at least as long as Technori, which is going back to 2010, you know. ShiftGig was on Technori stage, and we've had investors both in Technori and out of Technori who've put money in ShiftGig, and I'm personally a huge fan, but I'm a bigger fan of companies that continue to evolve and recognize when there are changes necessary, ideally before it's like required. It's necessary to be successful, but it's not necessarily required. You guys have announced some recent changes that I think, you know, as you'll talk about in this interview, I think are obviously very necessary, and there's a lot of reasons, but there's also a lot of opportunity. And I think you guys are making the right move. And so I think it'd be interesting to learn everything about ShiftGig. So why don't we have you give the rundown on the ShiftGig everyone knows and the ShiftGig everyone's about to meet.
Yeah, sure. And I'll have to tell the story of how Eddie tracked me down.
That's the best story. We'll save that. But let's start with what ShiftGig was when they recruited you.
Yeah. All right. So ever since 2015, ShiftGig had created a mobile marketplace where workers could find access to work in an on-demand way, and clients could access that labor pool on demand. And ShiftGig provided that service from really effectively beginning to end. And we did that in 13 different markets in the U.S. where we were actively out there screening for workers and attracting workers into this platform. We were interviewing them. We were background checking them, and we were bringing them into this marketplace. In many cases, we even, unlike a lot of marketplaces, were W-2ing this workforce. So they were on our payroll. So Imagine those 40 or 50,000 people on our payroll across the life cycle of the ShiftGig marketplace.
No liability.
And then on the other side, we were attracting customers. And so those ranged from small catering businesses or restaurants all the way up until big national food service companies that were staffing stadiums and events with hundreds of people. And so really ran the gamut there from that standpoint. So that was ShiftGig. Started in 2015, really up until last month, effectively, when we announced sort of a rolling set of changes. In February, we announced the availability of our technology as an independent platform that any company could leverage. And so we really think the reality is it's a great fit for staffing companies that need to be able to approach hospitality spaces, healthcare spaces, light industrial staffing. It's changing a lot. And be able to connect with their workers in a much different way to attract and retain them, and be able to work with clients in a way that's way more flexible and on-demand. So we opened up the platform starting in February. So that was obviously a big journey. And then we announced in April that we were actually going to get out of the full service staffing side of the business. And really, that was a big key to say, hey, customers, we're not gonna, this hybrid model feels very competitive, right? You're launching your business over here and we're still servicing in this other market. Maybe we got lucky and we didn't overlap, but it was a concern. And so we just wanted to really set it straight and say, look, we want to focus on the technology. We think the technology is amazing. How do we get that in as many people's hands? And how does that still connect us to our mission of transforming work for as many people as possible?
So I think, you know, people who listen to the show know a little bit of sort of my history in this kind of space and in the innovation space. Believe it or not, the show and all this was just made up. Like, I don't know, this all just like an epiphany one day. I was like, you know what, I ought to turn this and record it. And then here we are. but the reality is, the businesses that I find are successful over the long haul build a brand, and that brand is more or less reliability. Mm-hmm. It's certainty. As a customer, do I feel certain that these people will be here for me and that these people will be there repeatedly for me when I need them? And ShiftGig obviously did a great job of creating that, and in a lot of ways, to their own detriment at times, knowingly took on more responsibility and more cost than you probably needed to ensure that delivery of promise. But the really successful companies are the ones who have sort of, and I'd like to say in time, I'll write a book and look back at Technoria and say, this is the case for us, was that there's like a 5 or 7 or even I also say it's like 10 years before you really know who you are and what you do, like affirmatively. Look at Amazon. We talk about them like they're everything, but really, you know, it's in the 90s that company was started. Like they've been around a long time. You guys set up, let's call it, I'm going to make a lot of assumptions here and just say that you guys knew this all along, which you can just say you did. it's totally,
I like
fun.
It.
It's a good start. But the idea is like, this is the most likely path to revenue for us. It may not be the most scalable or the one that we're going to get the biggest bang out of, but this is what we need to be here. So here's the first one. Our secondary line of revenue is going to be this, and it's sort of the augmented approach. And our tertiary line is actually a technology as a service play. And we even have a fourth one that's maybe more of like a consulting, like how does one do this? And over the evolution of this company, ideally, the leadership should know which one, if we're going to become who we think and who we've told our investors we are, this one of the four should be our primary. But it could take 5 to 10 years to be able to elevate that to the top slot and slowly ramp down the other ones down to secondary, tertiary, and fourth. And you guys, I think, are doing that now. I think a lot of people, if they're not familiar with this process, they can look at this and be like, oh, they're changing gears or they're pivoting. And it's like, ask Chris Gladwin about the pivoting. If you looked at CleverSafe and you look at Oshii, you're like, oh, they pivoted 9-10. No, they didn't. He slowly ramped up where they could make recurring revenue. And you guys, I mean, like I said, we're very plugged into this. Like, there's no question of how big the market opportunity is if you just are a SaaS play and you can augment.
Well, and I think that's a really great point. And I think back to if Eddie had started the business back in 2015 and launched this as a SaaS play, whether it would have been successful. Because I think what we've found is that we've helped create the proof points that represent how... Because I think people are struggling with this out there in the workforce side and customers today. Everyone knows about the gig economy. Everyone knows about the Ubers and the Lyfts. Yep. And everyone wants to find a way inside of their companies to adopt some principles of the modern economy,
yep,
finding new ways to work, creating better business agility, connecting better with their workforce. Everyone is struggling to understand how. And I think I really do wonder if we had just started with this SaaS tool that everyone had to go figure it out themselves by leveraging just pure play tech, if that would have worked. And so I think we really, the amazing part of our journey from 2015 up until now has been an incredible set of learnings that we're bringing to our customers now in terms of the playbook for how to leverage our technology inside of their businesses. Now, we still have a ton to learn as well, because as, like you said, there's this huge market of companies that are feeling pain in how they connect with workers. And some of them haven't yet figured out how to decompose their work, or they feel this, well, how is a worker reliable if they're allowed to show up whenever they want or to pick up things on demand?
Yeah.
And so working through that with more and more companies, I think it's just so exciting now.
I don't want to shit on any companies or anyone's models, but I think it's worth doing sort of, and this isn't postmortem because they're not dead, but it's like I to your point, I want to kind of nail home the point you're making here. Hired took an example, and they were here in Chicago for a brief second. And we were partners with them, so like I said, I'm not poo-pooing, but I'm going to poo-poo. They took a very Silicon Valley risk, and that was, let's just try something new and throw it at you. And they grew really fast, whether that was VC-backed or how, you know, how they actually... I don't think it was actually revenue-driven, but anyway. They took a risk, and I think it ultimately didn't pay off. And that risk was... We are going to show you a new way to do things, and we're going to give you all the power, all the tools to hire your people on your own. But the problem is, we don't have enough power to control how it goes. We can't control the narrative. And so going back to the point I kind of brought up and then you nailed home, ShiftGig really had to do things the way that they did them, because you ensured that those people that run restaurants and event companies and anything that relies heavily on a gig economy, those individuals, had they tried ShiftGig and there was a drop off in output, or there were problems to your point about arrival and people getting there, had there been anything that was disruptive to the flow, they would say, see, this doesn't work, and it's over. Yeah. You guys had to prove that it works, and then you have this time to figure out second or even tertiary revenue model, which is in this case third case, which is, we got to make sure that we can recreate this in real time without having to pull all the strings. I look at what you guys did as a very, very expensive but version of simulation.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. But I think it was really, it was a huge process of building the proof point for how to engage a workforce differently and engage clients differently. And there's some awesome, there's so much that came away from it that's just amazing, especially even through some of the changes, say, we made last year as we honed in on the
operations. It's part of your competitive barrier for the next decade.
Yeah.
Because, Annie, we were talking about this offline, that there are companies out there that are competitors. This is an incredibly dense market. But in order for them to come and serve, it's not as simple as just building technology. They have to come here and know, here's what happens if client A has this happen or this happen. You guys have, I don't even want to know how much information you have on how this goes. It's got to be a ton. So you are 3-4 years ahead of where anyone who wants to drop into this, and you're in the most difficult economy, which is the gig economy. It's not like someone is going to have a 2-year stretch here. They're here for 2 weeks or less.
I think the great part is, though, right now it's just such a great time. Unemployment is extremely low. I mean, companies are in need. They're feeling the pain of attracting a workforce that really does have a lot of other options. You know, if they're not loving coming to work at X, Y, or Z manufacturing facility or logistics facility or this bar, they can just log into Uber and start working that way until they figure out something else. And so it's a pivot. I think it's a really great pivotal time right now.
Incredibly.
And we're just still seeing so much coming in from the standpoint of, to me, I think of it as this rising tide, rising all boats, as Uber starts to make investments in the space more so, or branches out to other role types and skills, and as other companies are investing more and more into this.
There's two things I want to talk to you about just because of the position you're in. I mean, the first thing is, you know, you guys are on the front line when it comes to, so like I talk about this all the time, and I will name drop here. We haven't had them on the show, so I know I can name drop them. But like the folks over at ActiveCampaign, the folks at Sprout Social, all of these different tech companies, they're hiring like crazy. They're hiring, 10 plus people, maybe just in tech alone, a month. And the best thing you can do is to create awareness for what kind of culture you have, what kind of company you have, what kind of opportunity. But in the end, you're all vying for the same talent and the same people. And it's the same thing goes for the gig economy. There's a million things going on. You guys, what is the one thing that you think you bring to these companies through technology now that enables them to be more competitive than ever before? Because I think that's a huge, I think like the awareness is great and all, but like if you can't close, what's the point?
Well, right. And actually, it's a great point. I even think like one step farther, which is once you get them in the door, that's actually not, that's a huge pain point in so many sectors and fields, but that really, particularly in some of the spaces that our platform is meant to serve based on it being a local, shorter term assignment, right? Like on demand, that's even worse by far in terms of how to keep them.
Yep.
And so I think that is where we double down. And you're, talking about the data of the past, it's really about the data of now, right? This platform is, so I think this differentiator is, how many companies today have an app in the pocket of their workers that not only understands what's happening on a day-to-day basis, but understands what they're interested in, but what they're looking at, right? Like the data of having that in their pocket and that information coming in all the time. This is where I think the gig economy and kind of thinking about how we decompose work is so interesting in a way, which is to say this provides, you know, you think I get nerdy and think of software and agile and how we've decomposed software development. But this same thing is happening here where, you know, this the ability to think about the work differently means, well, there's a point for a check-in.
Yep.
Every day? Maybe every 4 hours to see how things are going, right? And then it's a decision as to whether the worker says, I want to keep working, or I want to do this again, or I looked at this thing, but I wasn't interested, so I didn't pick it up. So I think one thing we've kept very central to what's important to us is this worker-centric experience. And it's really come down to that world where a worker can have their expectations met when they access this platform, they can find access to a piece of opportunity, and they can grab it, and it's theirs.
I don't want to tell you something you already know, but I'm going to do it. And then if I'm wrong, you're just going to laugh at me and this is going to be a great show. I look at another line of business that I know you guys have been in the past and maybe not digitally, but now can do digitally. I just think of I can't help it. My brain, you say you nerd out on the software. I nerd out on the model. And then I love to build the software behind it, like to make this happen, facilitate. I look at the core product being the actual how you connect these people and bring them in. But the secondary product that you have in here is every one of these gig economy people who are being hired or the employers, usually, I guess it's kind of an assumption I'm making here, but usually do not have an infrastructure or any sort of database or calculation as to know how to retain, because that's never been their business, but it can be. And you guys have the ability to your point, how many touch points? You have the ability to facilitate on behalf of your partners, the ability to say, listen, this person's been worked too many shifts or not enough shifts, or they deserve an overtime shift because it's been a while since they've been given that, or name your thing. And yep. You guys could literally create entire packages. I mean, you could change the way they compensate people. There's so many opportunities for you guys, and it's just a matter of figuring out how to monetize it, which is, you know, you're a smart guy.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think you're thinking about it exactly right. But I mean, yeah, there's so many opportunities right now. In a number of fields, say in some of the light industrial space with logistics facilities, what a huge business that is right now, and only something that's growing, right? Maybe robots will take over one day, but we're not there for quite
a while.
For quite a while. Yeah. And, you know,
and these people in particular, These are the last line of people to be replaced.
And companies are experiencing people not showing up to a schedule that they thought they had agreed to.
Yep.
I mean, we're talking somewhere between 5% and 10% of the time on a day-to-day basis.
Yep.
And so to I agree. There's a whole set of deeper things we can do, but to even do something simple like change the mindset where, no, just tell us when you do want to work and come empowered to do that. And if you can't, also tell us that. The worst thing we can do exactly, is to just not actually be honest with each other and make sure that the information's exchanged in a way that we can get ahead of it, right? And that business has an opportunity to get ahead of it. So imagine, it's a lot easier to tell an app, like, this doesn't work for me anymore.
I was just going to say, so Amanda Lannard, who I'm sure you know Amanda from Jellyvision, she talks about Alex and how their automated voice, essentially, when asking, I would say, you know, not necessarily overly personal questions, but the kind of stuff people lie about. Did you smoke? Did you, whatever, for healthcare stuff. I'm going to blow this, like, number is not accurate, but it's something close to this. It was something like 800 times. It was a nuts number. 800 times more likely to reply honestly to a bot than to a human being, even if they didn't know the human being. So to your point, you guys just plug that in and just get real information, and you're already 50 steps ahead.
Well, as much as we could have beaten ourselves up over ways we wanted to better optimize our full service marketplace, last year it was less than 1.5% of people not showing up versus that industry kind of standard, right? And there's no magic.
Boom,
there.
There's your ad.
There's no magic, right? But it's like having a way to have a communication that is honest and legitimate and gets the information in a way that everyone can fix the problem.
Well,
how valuable is that?
What do they say about great technology? It is something that appears to be magic. That's the whole, like, that's what sells tech, is people think that it's magic, and that you guys are already kind of scratching the surface on that, which is super cool. I have a random question for you, and then I want to hear the story about you coming on. The first random, the only random question ever is, it's not really all that random, but the gig economy in general. You mentioned earlier about unemployment being at an all-time low. I agree, and of course I'm happy about that, but I also know from having my finger on the pulse, like the amount of people getting hired in tech. But I'm skeptical of the numbers that I see from the government, not just because of the obvious orange effect, but also the reality of not properly calculating who's gig and not.
Or underemployment issues, right? Which
Correct.
Is they say, yeah, I'm employed, but I'm only getting, my company has sized down and I'm only getting 24 hours, or they don't want to get me up to full time. And I think there's a ton of issues out there like that, that I think we're a huge part of the solution set.
I was going to say, it's like, I don't have a real question here. I just have like a random complaint that I'm issuing, and you get it. But like, I really am curious as far as your position on, how much impact, in a real sense, not just Uber drivers, this gig thing has, because I firmly believe, and I tell this to all the students that I mentor at universities, whatever, you're going to have two, three jobs in, like, not in your career, at the same time. Well, and that's okay.
There's some really great data from, again, coming back to all the value this marketplace has given us, but there's this amazing data of, like, last year, for workers where we had vetted and given them access to three or more job types at the same time, their lifetime value was three times as high, i.e. they worked three times as many shifts as workers who had less skills available in our platform or less work they were allowed to pick up. So I think it speaks to, at least that's some confirmation bias, right? But like being able to connect it to workers that obviously wanted to work this way.
Sure.
But there is a big appetite out there for just having, particularly in a workforce that may not be able to get jump pay rates dramatically or make there's not as much out there that they can just jump up $5 an hour, right? But having some variation and flexibility can be pretty empowering in of itself.
I mean, I will say, I know several entrepreneurs who have, I'm not there yet in my developmental skills to be able to manage this, but I know several who are, tend to be younger than me because they're kind of familiar with it. Where they sort of, I don't know how to categorize this, they call it fleet manage, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they'll hire a marketing manager, a marketing officer, and then they'll say, okay, so I'm not just going to Upwork. This is like a list of 10 people who we've worked with to do several tasks, and I'll basically pay all of them $100, but I'll pay the best one $1,000. And they sort of offer up this sort of competitive balance. And I will say, speaking on the side of success, they love it because they get a variety of thought constantly. And those doing it who you'd say, oh, they get the short end of the stick, not at all. They are actually making way more money than they ever made in one singular position because they have all day long to give their best shot. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't, but they get paid regardless. And that to me is like a game changer.
Yeah, amazing. I think of in our space, what's something super cool is when you think of the logistics space, it obviously is a very fluid business. So I just think of companies getting better and better at, I mean, right now it's still very traditional when you're in some of these spaces. It's 6 day, 10 hour work shifts. For one, what productivity are they getting out? But they actually track a ton of this stuff, right? They actually do count how much work's getting done and things like that. But how do they feed that stuff back in, to your point, to like get to this performance-based optimization?
Well, I'm sure you heard about the Amazon, right? And the metrics on the firing. They have automated firing.
I was going to say Amazon's recruitment
downside.
Matching
tech. Well, recruiting thing is that's a no question. Yeah. That was literally like bias from the get-go. Yeah. But like, the metrics on automated firing is insane, but is it?
We honestly, within the marketplace, a lot of our clients, like, this is to the point of like, we're willing to go farther than maybe a SaaS client, a software client would go. We have reputation management in the platform. And so we have a couple policies that happen, but they're effectively based on reliability constructs. We don't know necessarily at the job, if they were a bartender, are they making the best drink out there? That data doesn't always feed back. But what certainly feeds back is when they picked it up, did they show up and did they get there on time? Did they leave on time? Did their manager provide a good rating? Was there good feedback exchange? Did the worker provide good feedback?
You could plug in revenue numbers on that though and baseline to say like when so-and-so works, you get better. We always look at the negative and be like, oh, you know, you put these metrics in for firing. There's massive upside also. Like there's so many ways that certain people make the team and the overall performance of the company better. And you can't, because of politics, you'll never know. So like we always immediately gravitate to the downside, but the upside is actually quite substantial as well.
There's also something about clear expectations and tech again doing it is another one. There's downsides to being having always a tech relationship, but something like this where, you know, in our case, in the marketplace, workers learned that if out of the last 10 rolling shifts, they dropped those shifts without us having much time to backfill them. If they did three of those, we would automatically deactivate their account until they'd gone through some disciplinary review. And if they no call, no show, they were just deactivated and they weren't allowed back, right? So they were, and it was all automated. So they didn't have to go talk to someone. There was no one to go have, you know, kind of have that conversation with, wow, I had a really good reason. Yeah. It was just a very clear expectation and the system would track it and it would tell, it tells you about it.
I think it's, I am a fan, despite what people may think, I'm a fan. We could literally go on all day long about this. I can go in circles and I find this very fascinating. I, in fact, am going in circles. But I, before we go, I got to hear the story of you coming on here. So share with us how you ended up here.
Well, you know what? It's a really long journey. So let me try to sum it up short, but it really actually even comes back to my journey before I made it to Chicago. So I was at a startup called Hello Wallet, which we focused on democratizing financial guidance to all Americans.
Yep.
Really interesting because we really wanted, again, to attack. Our founder was a Brookings Institute fellow who wanted to attack the payday loan industry. And so this all kind of comes full circle for me a little bit, which is, and we worked really hard on that from the standpoint of helping people budget and cash flow manage. And we were really excited when Walmart became a customer and other big customers wanted to leverage the platform. But it was really hard. It was hard to come in at that point in the, you know, in the problem, which is like after something not so great's already happened, the system trying to tell you you're not doing so great, right? So it was a hard, that's a hard problem. But then, so at that company, I actually met a guy named Michael Yak, who was the head of product there, and I was the head of engineering. And he left, came to ShiftGig really early on, about 5 years ago as the head of product, I think four years ago or so with Eddie. And I moved to Chicago much later after that same startup got bought by Morningstar.
Yep.
And so that brought me up here to Chicago. And of course, he was one of the first people I called. He's set me up with our, what's a really good friend, but our realtor and like doctor, everything, right? And so really stayed in touch with him to the point of when they were really looking to expand their technology team. And he was like, you're the guy, you got to do this. And I'm like, no. Morningstar, I just got here. We're doing amazing things, right? I'm taking on software practices across Morningstar. It's really awesome. And then Eddie gets involved. He's like, well, just meet Eddie. And
That's how it starts.
And then Eddie did a really great job. And I don't know if I've ever given him credit for this, so he'll like this, but I may have. But like at that meeting, he explained the business. It's very exciting. And then he's like, don't worry about our need. Just take the opportunity to meet some of our board members. What could hurt? You're new to Chicago. You're not part of the startup scene. Yep. I have a great network. I'll just use it as a great opportunity for you to get to know some more people in the community. And so I did. So then I met Sam Yagan, who's on our board, and he kind of explained things to me. And then, of course, the ball was just rolling where I was getting excited, even though I really wasn't kind of seeking a new opportunity at that point. And
that's an Eddie story.
Yeah.
Like he sold you on like, yeah, it's a great company. Of course, come on in. We'd love to work. But actually, don't worry about it. You can come here and you're going to meet everybody. You're going to get a, I think that's the same pitch that I gave our young Davis. He came here from Milwaukee. He wants a job. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to pay you shit. I don't know what you get paid. Hopefully more than I pay Davis. But I'm like, I'm not going to pay you that well. But I think that at minimum, you want to expand your network and get into this to Chicago market, and this is the best way on the planet to do so.
Well, and for me, obviously, that was compelling. I'd come up here as part of an acquisition. I knew no one, right? Really, in this
world.
And
I'm sure he sold you on the how the acquisition usually goes. And oh, it's so fun. It's so fun to integrate with another company, especially a larger one. This is super fascinating. Rick, I appreciate you taking the time here. Where do people go to learn more about ShiftGig and to keep up with you guys?
I think our website's probably the easiest, and you can follow either me. I try to tweet about what's going on, but also just follow our ShiftGig handle on Twitter, I think, is pretty good. Our Facebook page is really active as well.
I like to do like live surveys. I'm going to ask you right now.
Okay.
LinkedIn, we're trying to figure this out for ourselves. LinkedIn, Twitter. Twitter's on the rise again. And there's an interest as a CEO to be the front man and to not be so connected. LinkedIn, I feel like, while it is the most logical, it feels like a cesspool to me at times. And so, not that Twitter isn't, but Twitter, I can stay out of it. I choose to.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't have to scroll.
That's a really good point. I mean, certainly I spend plenty of time on LinkedIn,
yeah.
And it's a critical
part.
I would
imagine as a recruiting firm, technology-based. Yeah.
But actually, interestingly, for the kinds of firms that we are spending time with, that's actually not one of their most active places to go. So it's not actually the most natural, necessarily. It's hard. I don't know. I don't know the perfect answer.
You just did something fun. You got whatever it was. You took, whether it was a picture or a thought in your head. You got to go to the bathroom for 10. You got 5 minutes. You only get one platform to pick. Which one are you posting on?
I would probably do Twitter.
Twitter.
Maybe that just makes me like old school.
No, because it's on the up and up again.
Okay.
So like, I don't. Rachel, our marketing manager, we've been talking about this back and forth. I cannot decide. This should be our space where I know the answer immediately, and yet it's LinkedIn is there. It's such an obvious answer that I have second guesses because I think it's accessible. Anyway, this is awesome. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah,
really appreciate
fun.
It. Of course, you can learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities by subscribing to our newsletter, which you can do by going to technori.com, download the podcast on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on social @Technori or follow me @Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.